Welcome to the OHS Connect Knowledge to Action podcast series on risk communication. I'm Catherine Ogden, Manager of Knowledge Solutions. In this series, we'll be speaking with Dr. Peter Sandman, creator of the Risk Equals Hazard Plus Outrage formula for risk communication. Dr. Sandman is one of the preeminent risk communication speakers and consultants in the United States today, and has also worked extensively in Europe, Australia, and elsewhere. Dr. Sandman has helped his clients through a wide range of public controversies that threatened corporate or government reputation. From oil spills to labor management battles, from vaccine autism scares to the siting of hazardous waste facilities. He has also worked on the other side of risk issues, helping activists arouse concern about serious hazards and helping companies persuade employees to take safety rules seriously, and finally, in risk communication situations such as terrorist attacks and epidemics. In this podcast series, we will learn more about these risk communication paradigms and how to apply them to particular circumstances. Joining me in my conversation with Peter is Catherine Combe, the Executive Director of Harrow Park Centre, a campus of care in the West End of Vancouver. Catherine brings with her some experience with risk communication, including the crisis communication that accompanied an acute care facility evacuation and the SARS outbreak in Toronto. Welcome, Peter and Catherine. Thanks so much for joining us. We're very pleased to have you be part of this conversation today. To start us off, I'd like to just ask you, Peter, how risk communication differs from risk assessment and crisis communication, why these distinctions are important.
Well, let me start with risk communication versus risk assessment. The usual distinction that's made is a three-way distinction. Risk assessment is figuring out how dangerous something is. Then risk management is deciding what to do about it. And then risk communication is telling people what you decided and why. But I think that's very old-fashioned, and it's increasingly accepted that communicating is something you ought to do before managing, not after. And even risk assessment often comes out better if you talk to people first, both because you'll do a better job assessing the risk if you ask people what they know, and also because they're likelier to accept the results of your assessment if they had a role, or at least if they got to watch. As for the distinction between risk communication and crisis communication, both terms have multiple definitions. It's a thicket to try to figure out what they mean and get a consensus on what they mean. PR people, for example, use the term crisis communication to refer to reputational crises where people are upset at what your company or your agency has done, even though they're not greatly at risk. I prefer to confine the term crisis communication to real crises when people are rightly upset because the risk is serious. As for the term risk communication, it's become very voguish. It's now applied even to traditional science education and the like, and unfortunately, it's applied even to one-sided, one-way propaganda that's aimed at persuading people to stop worrying and leave you alone. And I think that's either not risk communication at all or very bad risk communication.
So, Peter, how do you approach risk communication?
Well, in my approach, I start with the distinction between hazard and outrage. Hazard is how serious a risk is technically, how likely it is to hurt you or damage the ecosystem or kill people. And outrage is how serious the risk is socially, how likely it is to upset people, to anger people, or to frighten people. For me, the most fundamental truth of risk communication is the extremely low correlation between hazard and outrage. It's virtually no relationship at all. If you know people are endangered, that tells you almost nothing about whether they're upset. If you know people are upset, that tells you almost nothing about whether they're endangered. So if you look at those two concepts, hazard and outrage, and imagine a 2x2 table, high hazard versus low hazard, high outrage versus low outrage. So you've got four boxes. Then you can begin to identify the very different paradigms that make up risk communication. Let's start with the box that is high hazard and low outrage. People are endangered but not upset. Might be smoking, might be driving your car without a seatbelt or while talking on your cell phone. I call that precaution advocacy. The task is to persuade people to take the risk more seriously. You're trying to increase the outrage in order that people are likelier to take precautions. The opposite corner is the low-hazard, high-outrage corner, where people are upset but not endangered. And I call that outrage management. The job there is to try to persuade people to calm down. Obviously, you don't persuade people to calm down by saying calm down, because it doesn't calm people down to be told to calm down, and especially if your tone of voice suggests that what you're really saying is calm down, you hysterical fool. But the task is indeed to calm people down in that outrage management corner, to reduce the outrage so that you will reduce the hazard perception and the inclination to take precautions that you think are not needed. The third corner is the high hazard, high outrage corner. And that's crisis communication. People are endangered, and they're upset, and they're right to be upset because the risk is real. So unlike outrage management, where you're trying to get them less upset, or precaution advocacy, where you're trying to get them more upset, in crisis communication, they are appropriately upset. They are upset about as much as they should be, but there's still communicating to be done. You still have to help them bear their outrage. You have to help them make wise rather than unwise decisions about how to protect themselves. The fourth corner, low hazard, low outrage, is not very interesting. If people are rightly apathetic about something that is a genuinely low risk, low hazard, there's very little to say to them. And what would you say? Congratulations on your apathy. You're absolutely right. This is trivial. So there's very little communicating to be done in the low hazard, low outrage corner. The other three corners are three radically different kinds of risk communication. And in order to do good risk communication, you need three toolkits, one for each corner.
Now, Peter, there's lots of information out there on how to conduct a risk assessment, but how difficult is it to measure outrage, and can you recommend any particular strategies for folks on how to do that?
Well, of course, manifest outrage is very easy to measure. You count how many people are yelling at you during a meeting or writing angry letters or signing petitions or throwing rocks at your car. No problem measuring how upset people already are. Or you can use traditional survey methods, asking people how angry they are, how frightened they are about a situation, or how angry or frightened they would be if such a situation were to happen. The more difficult task is measuring latent outrage. That is the potential of a situation to arouse outrage so that you can predict it and decide maybe not to do that. Maybe we shouldn't do whatever mandatory vaccination because we're going to get more outrage than is justified. Or at least you can prepare for the outrage and come up with strategies to cope with the outrage. So measuring latent outrage is harder, but it's not that hard if you're willing to settle for a rough measure. We know the components of outrage. We know they are things like control and dread and trust and memorability and responsiveness. And it's not that difficult to roughly assess the situation in terms of those factors, add them up, and get a seat-of-the-pants measure. It's not really an algorithm. We don't have a regression equation. But we can get a seat-of-the-pants measure of how much outrage a situation is likely to provoke. Very often, my clients are inclined to think that outrage is harder to measure than hazard. And I don't think that's true at all. I think that even though outrage measurement is difficult and it's imprecise, it's not nearly as difficult and imprecise as hazard measurement. I mean, you look at a typical situation. Let's suppose there's a factory, and the factory is emitting dimethyl meatloaf out its stack, and there are people angry and upset and worried that the dimethyl meatloaf is going to cause cancer in the community. And you look at two aspects of that situation. Let's narrow it down to one hazard issue and one outrage issue. The hazard issue might be, let's say, the dose response curve of dimethyl meatloaf for pancreatic cancer. You know, how much dimethyl meatloaf will cause how much pancreatic cancer. And the other issue is the integrity of the plant manager, how often the plant manager has misled the community about how much dimethyl meatloaf is going out the stacks. Now, what I think it's important to notice is we have much better data on the integrity of the plant manager than we do on the dose response curve for dimethyl meatloaf. You know, on the dose response curve, we've got a dot at the origin that says if you don't emit much, nothing happens. And you've got a dot way out in the stratosphere that says if you emit a great deal, a lot of people get sick. And in the middle, you're not at all sure what's happening. And many hazard assessments, there are orders of magnitude of difference of opinion as to the seriousness of the hazard. But we actually have pretty good data on what the plant manager has said to the community and whether the plant manager has been candid or less than candid. So although it's hard to measure outrage, it's not nearly as hard as measuring hazard.
Okay, thanks, Peter. That's a really good introduction to the different paradigms and to getting a better understanding of how you would measure outrage. So thanks for joining us for this segment of our discussion with Peter Sandman, and join us next week as we carry on with our conversation.